What's happening, sports crew, and welcome to the First and Goal Show Week 10 DraftKings Picks. I'm your host, Mike Stromey, just kicking it with you today. No Lou Landers. It does look like he is somewhere in between Texas and Mexico. Must be beautiful this time of year. But that being stated, I will be going over my DraftKings picks for the main slate Week 10. A lot of value, a lot of return of the Jedi this week with a lot of big names coming off injury for their first game back. We'll look into that. And if we have a little bit of time later on in the show, which I do believe we will, given the fact that me and Lou are not going to be going back and forth on our picks, I will be diving into a macro look on how to attack the showdown slates, which I have been having quite a bit of success lately with, and I've had a lot of questions in regards to that, so I will be bringing that up later on in the show. Don't forget to check us out, check out our partners at fantasyblueprints.com. They are doing very well with the DFS and picks and whatnot. A lot of dangerous takes over there with my main man. Shout out to my main man, Jonathan Dangicole. Going down to the danger zone there over at fantasyblueprints.com. So I guess we'll start off at the quarterback position. I do think that there is a lot of value. Mind you, I am a big fan of the guys at the top of the end, like your Kyler Murray's, Josh Allen, Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers, all in tremendous matchups, but you do have to pay a pretty penny for them. And while I don't have a problem with that, and I do believe that I will end up doing that later on in the slate, there are some guys on the back end, if you do want to get a little bit contrarian, that I do think can and will return value. And that's what we're going to start off with. We're going to start off in South Beach with Tua. It is Tua time, as we know, at 5,600. We didn't see a lot of him in his first start, and honestly, he didn't have to do much with how well that Miami defense did play against the Rams in his debut. Last week, he did prove that even as a, you know, quote-unquote raw rookie, that he can trade shot for shot with another pro quarterback in Kyler Murray. And I think that you could see a little bit more of that as well when they host the Chargers in a weird 4 o'clock kick for an East Coast team. That being stated, it's not only the fact that he was able to get the ball down the field against a Cardinals defense that was coming off a bye and did show that they can, that they did play a little bit over their heads and were able to kind of take away what many other teams have tried to do against them, and Tua actually performed well. He was able to match, you know, Kyler Murray shot for shot, was able to inevitably come out as the victor while putting up numbers in the process. But the one thing that kind of popped out to me, which I didn't think we would see from Tua this early, is his mobility. He was able to carry the ball about 9 times for 37 yards. And I don't see a reason why that won't continue against a Chargers team that has been absolutely getting gashed lately against the likes of Derek Carr and Drew Locke. I think Tua can continue that trend against a Chargers defense that looks a little bit lost without Derwin James, and Nick Bosa hasn't been playing that well either. I think we could see some points out of Tua. And the next quarterback I'm going to talk about is somebody who has been playing well, who hasn't necessarily been playing well from a taking care of the ball standpoint and a real football standpoint. There's been a lot of criticism about this sophomore slinger, but the fact of the matter is Danny Dimes does have mobility. He is an athletic quarterback, and he can get the ball down the field against this Eagles defense. And at 5,200, I have absolutely no qualms about sliding in some Danny Dimes into the jukebox there. Not to mention, he did have a 90-yard run against the Eagles on Thursday Night Football in their previous matchup. He has proven that he can get out of the pocket and make some things happen with his legs and with his arm. And quite frankly, he can turn over the ball. I'll take the minus if he is able to put up points at 5,200. With the amount of interesting ways we can go at the skill position, with skill position players at the running back and wide receiver position, I'll take the savings at 52. And another NFC East quarterback at the same price, mind you, he is a little bit longer in the tooth and may or may not have the same mobility that he does have now, is Alex Smith. I don't mind taking him at 5,200 as well. I do believe that the Detroit defense is very similar to the Chargers, very similar to the Eagles, where I do think while they do have the ability to shut down mediocre quarterback play, they still haven't to this point this year. The Lions have been able to blow leads, much like the Chargers have this year, and they have been able to give up points. And I think Alex Smith, even coming in relief, did get close to 300 yards against the Giants last week. I think you give him a full week of practice, full week of reps as with the ones, getting more familiar with guys like Terry McClure, more familiar with guys like Logan Thomas. He was the third string quarterback technically coming into training camp. A little bit of a surprise that they did give him a spot on the roster, given the fact that they did believe Dwayne Haskins was going to be the guy. It's the first time he's actually had an extended look with the first team, with the first team offense, and I think that is going to pay dividends for a veteran quarterback who still has accuracy. The mobility isn't there, obviously due to the gruesome injury he did face a couple of years ago. I don't think, but he will be able to return value at 5,200, and it's going to allow you to really pay up at other positions. If we're staying in that same mold, I also don't mind a little bit of going a little bit Luton free with Jake Luton, especially if Jair Alexander is out. Last week on Thursday Night Football, when he left with a concussion, that's really when the 49er offense, who was absolutely stymied for three quarters, that's when they were able to get the ball out to Rich James, bitch, and able to drive down the field. I think we'll talk about who we like at the receiver position. That kind of correlates with these quarterback plays a little bit later on. We're gonna jump over to the running back position, where there is a lot of good options at the top end. You know, Alvin Kamara's back on the slate. We got a seemingly healthy Aaron Jones once again. Those guys are excellent plays. Have absolutely no qualms about that. But if you do want to get a little bit contrarian, I do believe that there's a few options that we can look at. And that's one in a guy that let everybody down last week. And I do believe Lou brought him up on the show last week. And on paper, it was an absolutely tremendous matchup, but it just did not work. And that is James Conner. He is at a healthy 6,900. And yes, I know that, you know, he was going up an absolutely putrid Dallas defense and did absolutely nothing. And I think it goes to show that his price did not change too much. I believe it actually went up since last week. And he is going up against the Bengals, who are just as bad against the run, if not worse. And I think a lot of people will see the price tag. They'll see what he did last week. A lot of what DraftKings ownership is, and DFS ownership as a whole, a lot of that, what that is what people have seen last, to be completely honest, and that's just human nature. And I think we can go against that if we do take James Conner at 6,900. Couple of elite guys in terms of usage and talent are coming back off of bye week. They were injured going into the bye week, but I do believe both of them will be active, and they will both be in matchups that I do think can be completely exploited. First one is honestly a no-brainer, and that's Nick Chubb at 6,800. And this is the perfect storm. Nick Chubb was one of the top running backs in football. He led the league in rushing last year, and I believe he was top three before he went down about 4 to 6 weeks ago. I can't remember exactly when he went down, but he is at a healthy 6,800 and going up against a Houston Texans team that is absolutely putrid stopping. They're just a bad defense altogether, but they are the worst against the run. And if you give me an angry Nick Chubb coming off a bye, he has been practicing all week, but he still has that IR tag on DraftKings. And I think a lot of people are still going to see that. And I don't think he's going to be officially active until Saturday or Sunday, which means that he still will have that tag, and that will drive down ownership in an absolutely tremendous matchup. I love Nick Chubb this week. And give me Miles Sanders at 6,400. I know he's got the questionable tag, but it does look like Nick Chubb, he has been practicing all week. And while the Eagles did kind of sort of get away from his usage, from the usage at the running back position when they were playing Boston Scott, with all due respect to Boston Scott, he does not have Miles Sanders' burst and ability. And I do believe that usage is going to get upticked from, you know, the 9 to 12 carries to maybe 15 carries with 4 to 5 targets out of the backfield. You're looking at pushing 20 touches for Miles Sanders in a game that I believe could sneakily shoot out. I'm going to be going back to that game quite a bit throughout the broadcast as far as this slate is concerned, but Miles Sanders at 6,400 is not a bad play if you do want to get away from the chalk of Aaron Jones and Alvin Kamara, who are both top running backs in games where the game script is in their favor. I think those could be different ways to get away from that. Over to the wide receiver position, and this guy was regarded as the best wide receiver in the NFL coming into this year. However, I don't believe he has cracked the 100-yard mark on the year, mainly due to injury, mainly due to God knows whatever happened in practice with this guy. But Michael Thomas is back. He is healthy. He is graded as the fifth or sixth most expensive receiver on the board in a matchup where another elite receiver in Devontae Adams just absolutely tore apart this decimated 49er defense. And again, people can they'll remember what Michael Thomas was, but they won't really act on it like they should, like he is Devontae Adams, despite the discrepancy in price, just due to the fact that they haven't seen him do much. The Saints blew out the Tampa Bay Bucks on primetime football last week, and he really wasn't needed in that game. That'll drive down his ownership just due to the fact that he was only 5 catches for 56 yards and he didn't score. I think he could be a nice contrarian play there. The next two guys I want to talk about are guys I will be tying to quarterbacks that we looked at earlier in the slate, and that is Sterling Shepard at 5,000 and TJ Chark at 6,200. Now, and I've made this mistake too, thinking that when Darius Slayton was the last man standing in this Giants defense, he was getting all the volume. He was getting quite a bit of play, and it looked like he did have that rapport with Daniel Jones just due to the fact that both of them were rookies last year. Both of them went through rookie camp together. Both of them were working with the twos, while Eli Manning was working with Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Golden Tate with the ones last year. You think that was a little bit of a correlation. That hasn't really happened since Sterling Shepard has came back the last few weeks. He has had 8 targets in each of his last 2 games and is seeing just as many snaps as Darius Slayton. It does look like Danny Dimes is looking Sterling Shepard's way, and I still think that Darius Slay will be on Darius Slayton, because I do think he is the most athletic guy on the field, and that's what happened on their Thursday night matchup last week, leaving Sterling Shepard open on the secondary option, which is where I do believe he will be targeted coming out of the slot, just due to the fact that I don't think that the Eagles can keep up with slot receivers in that respect. And he is getting the usage, so I like him at 5K. DJ Chark at 6,200 has a nice matchup in the terms of, you know, garbage time. The Packers are 2 touchdown favorites at home to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, mind you, this is Lambeau in November, so there could be weather concerns, although I don't think there will be. I don't think there will be anything that will impact the game in a major way, but it is something to keep in mind. And especially as I mentioned off the when we were talking about Jake Luton in the quarterback matchups, if Jair Alexander is out and we have garbage time, if he's out with a concussion and we have garbage time with the Jacksonville Jaguars, DJ Chark will. You know, he will perform, and as somebody who made, you know, five figures off of exploiting that Packers secondary, or you know, having teams exploit that Packers secondary in garbage time, I think we could see the same with DJ Chark. There's more of an emphasis on Jacksonville pushing the ball down the field. That's why Gardner Minshew won't see another snap with this team this year, barring injury. It's because Jake Luton has the better arm, and they are looking to get the ball down the field in a season that seems to be all but lost. So we're gonna switch over to the tight end position, and I guess you can kind of tell who my where my stack of the week is concerned and which game I think is going to shoot out, which is a question that Lou asks me each week. And I think, it's sneakily speaking, there's a lot of high totals on the board, and I do think those games are going to see points. But there's one in the mid 40s where, you know, there's the old adage of if two bad teams are going to play, it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be that 17-14 crap show that you usually see. It's going to be a little bit of a shootout. And I think both tight ends in the NFC East, in with Giants, Eagles, are poised to have big games. Dallas Goedert at 4,200, a very modest 4,200. Is a guy, I know, again, another guy coming off injury, another guy who has produced in the past, another guy who is underpriced because he is coming off injury. We saw Christian McCaffrey come off injury last week and pick up right where he left off. Eagles are coming off a bye too, and they love to target the tight end. I think we're going to see a lot out of Dallas Goedert, and, you know, a slate where Darren Waller is the highest priced tight end, and that's fine. And I think you can get your share of him. He gets as much play and as much usage in that offense as guys like Travis Kelce in their offense, and as George Kittle in his offense as well. It's just not as high. It's just not as explosive as those two offenses can be. That being said, give me Dallas Goedert and give me Evan Engram on the other end. This is a guy I have been bringing up since the preseason as far as usage is concerned. With Jason Garrett running that offense, Evan Engram has, if you look at his total snaps played on the year and his total targets on the year, they will mirror what Jason Witten saw under Jason Garrett in Dallas. And, you know, they haven't, I think it might have been, maybe it was a confidence issue with Evan Engram getting the ball. There has been a lot of drops. The numbers just haven't been there for the first half. They're starting to turn around recently. He is finding the end zone. He is eclipsing, you know, he is going over on receiving yard props, for lack of a better term. You know, he is getting the, you know, the 40 to 60 yards and a score. And I think you can get that and if you get that at 4,500, that's all you really need to return value that position. So I'm going to go with both tight ends in that game. It's kind of a catch 22, given the fact that they are playing in the same game. But I do think it's interesting that, it's an interesting little stack, that Giants Eagles game. And would I have preferred these two tight ends to be playing different teams this week for, you know, just to kind of get away from that game a little bit? Yes, but here we are, and those are the two plays off the board that really jump out at me. Just happens to be a coincidence that's in the same game, so we can spread that out if you are a if you are a multi lineup player such as myself. Over to the defenses, and we've got the Steelers at the top at above 4,000. That's great. That's fine. It's ideally you want to go up against a bad offensive line. You want to go up against a quarterback that turns over the ball. You have both of those checked off with the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow. However, I like to pay up elsewhere, just given the volatility at the defensive position. So we're going to pay down a little bit. There's a couple of mid-range options that I do like, and one of them is the Washington football team at 3,200 going up against the Detroit Lions. The Lions are not a great offensive line. You've got Matt Stafford, who's in concussion protocol, I believe, so you may or may not see Chase Daniel again. Whether it's Chase Daniel, whether it's Matthew Stafford, I like this defense regardless due to the fact that they are number two in the NFL in adjusted sack rate. Only the Steelers get after the quarterback more than the Washington football team. The Detroit offensive line is substandard to mediocre, and I do think you can see some turnovers, and I don't care who's behind center for the Detroit Lions. You are going to get some pressure there. On the other side of the ball, or the other mid-range option I like is the Cleveland Browns at 2,900. Listen, you got Myles Garrett, you got Olivier Vernon. That secondary can give up points, they can give up big plays. You know, two guys like Will Fuller, two guys like Brandon Cooks, who has been playing well recently, and Deshaun Watson can get the ball down the field. But the fact of the matter is, the Houston Texans not only have one of the worst defensive lines in the NFL, they have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL as well. They just get gashed on both sides of the trenches. And with a mobile quarterback like Deshaun Watson, he's not really prone to throwing interceptions per se, but he is prone to taking sacks. And if you get sacks, you get fumbles, maybe you can get some interceptions as well. Like I said, the Cleveland secondary is absolutely leaky, and I think you'll see that green. You'll see that green beside a lot of the Houston skill position players, and that's fine and dandy. But if they can get after the quarterback, I certainly think that Cleveland at 2,900 is a fantastic play. That being said, my favorite play, and this might sound like a little bit of a quote unquote homer pick because I am a lifelong St. Louis/LA Rams fan, but the Rams at 2,200 is almost too good to be true. If you kind of fade out the Russell Wilson for MVP noise that we've been hearing for the last 2 months. And I listen, they could give up 30, 35 points, no problem. I could honestly see that as being one of the range of outcomes. That being said, the Rams are a top 10 defense no matter how you slice it. They are coming off a bye. They are at home. They're able to get after the quarterback. Their secondary has been playing well. They've had that extra time to prepare, and they are a top 10 team in adjusted sack rate. The Seattle Seahawks are down near the bottom. They have an absolutely putrid offensive line. While Russell Wilson hasn't been really prone to turning over the ball throughout his career, he was able to the Buffalo Bills were able to get him to turn over the ball last week. And Aaron Donald has absolutely feasted in his career against a Seattle Seahawks offensive line that has been neglected for the last decade, more or less. Russell Wilson is prone, while he may or may not turn over the ball, he is prone to giving up sacks. The ownership will not be there, given that the Seahawks can put up points and will put up points, as far as getting the ball to, you know, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson. Obviously, you see that big name there, and you don't really want to play a defense going up against him. But I think the Rams are absolutely mispriced at 2,200 and should be able to certainly return value. Like I said, you can give up as many points as you want. Sacks and turnovers is what we need out of a defense, and at 2,200, I absolutely love it. They will be my favorite play from a defensive perspective. Now, as far as games that I do believe will shoot out, you know, there's the obvious candidates. I obviously think the Bills and the Cardinals is aptly priced in the 55-point range as far as Vegas totals are concerned. But I honestly think there's a lot of usage, and there's a lot of different ways you can slice up the Eagles and the Giants. That game that game was a crap game on Thursday night that got into the low 40s. But both of these teams are starting to get healthier from an offensive perspective, and I don't trust either defense. I honestly don't. I like the way that the Giants handled themselves against a Washington team that, as I mentioned before, have the second highest adjusted sack rate and can certainly get after the quarterback. He was able to hold his own there, and I think you get another look at an Eagles team that can be had, and the Giants can do that, and certainly the Eagles have absolutely no problems against a Giants defense that, while they've been a little bit scrappy, have been prone to the big play. Not a bad way to stack that. I think, Travis Fulgham, Sterling Shepard, Miles Sanders, Danny Dimes. Even if you want to go the other way with Carson Wentz, I don't have a problem with that. He's still aptly priced as well, and obviously both tight ends. There's just a lot to like about this game, and I can't guarantee that this game will get into the 50s, but the opportunity for the main skill pieces of this offense are there, and I will have a lot of part of that. So that'll do it for the main slate. We do have a little bit of time left to discuss a basic showdown strategy, which I've been getting a lot of questions about, given the fact that I have won one of these tournaments this week. I was able to take down a 197,000 entry GPP. I did share first place with five other entries. We all had the same lineup. These things are going to happen when you win. When you win showdown, you could be first. The top prize could be, $25,000, $50,000. But if 20 other entries have your same lineup, you're going to be splitting that. I was able to get a little bit contrarian as far as that's concerned and take down the tournament with only five of the alike lineups. So basically what I like to do is, and we're going to start at the captain spot. And how I was able to do that was I was able to find a captain that was at the bare minimum of 200 in Richie James Jr. The only reason that I have Richie James Jr. at the captain spot, and I know that's an absolute dream because you want the min guy to really go off, but the fact of the matter is min guys don't really go off unless there's special circumstances. There were special circumstances in that matchup because, you didn't have Deebo Samuel. You didn't have Brandon Ayuk. He was on the list for COVID. Kendrick Bourne was out. So there's three guys. So then your top receiving options at that point were Trent Taylor, who was 35% ownership. I do believe that they thought he was going to play that role. But Richie James has been in that offense for a couple of had been in that offense for, two seasons or whatever. Since late 2018, I believe, had worked with Nick Mullins in the past, and basically had played that Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel role in a season that was absolutely lost when they picked number one overall. So, long story short, is what I like to do at captain is it needs to be, and I use this rule when I'm playing skill position players on the main slate as well. My captain has to be a running back, a receiver, or a tight end that is expected to see either 80% of the snaps or eight targets. As a running back, they need to see at least 15, or project to see at least 15 combined rushes and targets. That being said, you can use the quarterback at the captain's position as well. But the only way that that is going to work out is A, if it's a lower scoring game and the quarterback does not focus on one or two main guys and spreads the ball all over the field. That has happened recently. If you look at the Sunday night game between the Saints and the Buccaneers in week 9, that happened. If you did have Drew Brees at the captain position, that was great because he was able to find guys like Adam Troutman. He was able to find guys in the end zone like Josh Hill, and the Saints defense was able to go off. The kicker was able to produce points. That's the only way that the quarterback position at the captain spot really pays off. Another game like that would have been the Monday Night Football game between the Rams and the Bears, where if you did have Jared Goff at the quarterback position, he was able to, I think he had 2 touchdowns and 275, and they didn't necessarily go to guys like Cooper Kupp, like Robert Woods. It went to Josh Reynolds. It went to Gerald Everett. And, you know, you were able to basically, the lower owned options performed and returned value while having the quarterback at the captain's position. The other problem with having the quarterback at the captain's position, A, is because he's always, it doesn't matter who, if he's the top option on the board, he's going to be anywhere between 60 and 90% owned. B, his salary is always going to be at top, and when you put a cap, when you have to dress a captain, he's 1.5 times the salary. It really hampers what you're able to do at the back end of your roster, and it kind of hinders things there. So if it is a game that you do think is going to be, let's take for example, let's say for argument's sake, it's the, let's use the Bucks and the Saints as the example, but let's pretend it's a back and forth game, and you have Tom Brady at the quarterback position, or you have Tom Brady at the quarterback position, you're not going to be able to get Mike Evans in there. You'll only be able to get one of Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and then you're going to have to run it back with somebody on the Saints side as well. Like, it just limits what you're able to do, just given the fact that you're devoting essentially, you know, 20% of your budget to one position. And they really need to, and they absolutely need to go off for, you know, 4 touchdowns and 350 yards, no interceptions, and the guys that they're throwing the touchdowns to have to be the lower end guys. That's why I don't like playing the quarterback at the captain spot. Another, never play a kicker at the captain spot. Never play that value play where if you don't think that they're going to see the volume, because it could absolutely crap out on you. And defenses are cute at the captain's position, but they really need to have like that defensive score. They need to have, you know, 3 to 5 sacks, and they need to turn over the ball. They need to score a touchdown at the very minimum to return value at that position. And just due to the fact that if you have the only way that the defense can go off is if the game script kind of leans towards defense. And if it leans towards defense, the top end guys that you're going to be able to pay up for aren't necessarily going to have the best game. That's why I don't like playing defenses in general on Showdown. I have absolutely no problem in the main slate, obviously, because you do have to play defense. And there are ways where you can kind of get away from that one game if it does trend towards the defense, a la Rams and Dolphins from week 9. You can kind of get away from that and just kind of take the points of what the defense is. When it's just a singular game, the game script has to go completely in the defense's favor, and that would include a defensive score, and that usually just doesn't break. It doesn't break nearly as often as you think, and especially in a season where we're trending towards offense, we're setting records as far as that's concerned. I hate to use the cliche, it's a passing game, but it's a passing game. But long story short, you'll want to stick with the skill position guys. You want to find the guys who are going to see volume at no matter what position that they play, whether it's the running back, to wide receiver, or tight end. Now, another position I do want to bring up in general is the kickers. And I'm on hashtag ban kicker, team ban kickers, as far as that's concerned, as far as season long is concerned. We haven't really had to use kickers in DFS just because they're so hard to project. A kicker that goes into a game where they put up 50 points is going to have the same amount of points as a kicker who, you know, where their team puts up, I don't know, say 20, and they kick you know, two or three field goals. And some of those are, sometimes those are from range. You see a lot of more analytics where teams are going for it on fourth and short when they're in field goal range instead of kicking the field goal. They're just so hard to project as far as that's concerned. That being stated, they are right. They're usually around the in the 4,000, and they're usually in the 4K range. And it's not a bad floor if you if you're having trouble finding value below 4K and just want a half decent floor. If you want that easy 6 to 10 points where you can't necessarily find the upside with that on anything below, I have no problem sticking a kicker in the lineup, but that's basically how you would utilize a kicker. But that being said, that'll do it for the DraftKings show. First and Goal. I'm your host, Mike Stromey. You can follow me on Twitter at Stromey_93 if you do feel so inclined. Don't forget to check out our partners at FantasyBlueprint.com for all the work they do. You know, they were able to produce some winners earlier in the year. They continually make profits each and every week, both from a DFS and a handicapping perspective. A lot of smart minds out there. Shout out to my boy Jonathan Danger Cole, as he does great work over there. But that'll do it. Lou will be back next week, Lord willing. I'm just traveling this week. It's just me for the DFS show. And I'm Mike Stromey, your host. Stay classy, everybody. As Lou would say, stay classy.